Nelson here again, and I'm glad to have you back on Spotlight by PSNYPG. Welcome to episode 3. If this is your first time, also a very warm welcome to you, and I hope you just get strapped on and ready to enjoy this ride. Spotlight was conceived with the aim to help young pharmacists transition into the professionals that they are, obviously, and also help show a path to rising through the ranks across different sectors of work. And most of our focus will be on different parts of the pharmacy space, but the content here is relevant for upward mobility anywhere. So today's guest is pharmacist Shino Opanupi, a healthcare strategist by excellence. He is a business process innovator and is currently the project catalyst for Farm Alliance, a network of pharmacy businesses that share a common pool of resources for accounting, insurance, business development, and a whole lot more. And the network boasts a collective annual turnover of over 10 billion naira and continues to onboard like-minded pharmacies. I try not to go into the description of our guests because I really want you to be able to describe yourself in a way that is more suited to how you want to project. So I think I'll leave it on to you now that you kind of describe yourself in maybe a few words. What should we know about you? Yeah, we could start from there.
Okay, good morning. Thanks for having me aboard. It's always a pleasure to share my thoughts, even though erratic sometimes, and my thoughts basically with the coming generation. So essentially, like you said, my name is Adeshina Opanupi, a pharmacist trained in the University of Lagos. Second of three children, born 40, getting old now, 42 years ago. what else would you like to know? Secondary school, I attended Mayflower Secondary School in Ikene with Taishonari. I hope you know him. So essentially, that's my, you said a summary, so let's not go into too much details. But then essentially that's how come I got into the profession of pharmacy. And then after that, I had a brief stint with JK. I worked directly under Mr. Pharmacy Jimmy Abaji. From there, I did my internship in Louvre.
Okay, so
I'm jumping in, right?
No, it's fine, but we could just probably go a bit more slower. So,
okay, I think all right.
Yeah. So you talked about Mayflower and then those other parts. I really want to kind of get an understanding of how maybe where you grew up, how it might have affected your choice.
Okay, so my growth trajectory probably never had anything to do with pharmacy. I was born, I think I still remember the address. I was born in Kitsu, 41 at the Sakintoye Street, Kitsu. I lived there till I lived there for about 8-9 years. Then we moved to Idimu. We lived in Idimu for another 10 years, and then moved to Magodo it was from there, then I got married and then moved to Kitsu, and then moved around basically. but all in Lagos. It was secondary school that took me out of Lagos into Ogun State. Yeah. So did that have anything to do with my choice of pharmacy? I don't think so. I don't think there was any pharmacist I saw as I was growing up on it. Because of this, I want to be a pharmacist. No. It was a jam something, probably influenced by my father. I think I always wanted to study agricultural economics. Because in secondary school, I enjoyed Agric. and I also enjoyed economics. So I just felt a combination of the two would make sense. But my father, I think, counseled me out of it. And he said I should do a professional course and all that. And we settled for pharmacy. But before pharmacy school, I went to Federal Polytechnic Ilaro to study estate management. I was there for 1 year. And it was at the, when I finished my last paper in ND1. My father came and whisked me off straight to Unilag registration point for registration as a as a pharmacy student. So,
wow. So it means pharmacy was a large part of why you came into pharmacy. And would you say it's in any way been? Has there been any regrets in terms of the decision in any way?
Just study pharmacy.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Well, no regrets at all. I mean, I don't practice conventional pharmacy anyway, so I don't get to probably feel firsthand the complaints that people feel. When I say I don't practice hands-on, but I work with practically every facet of pharmacy. And because of my disposition and outlook to things, even if I was practicing in mainstream, I probably wouldn't be complaining because we'll be developing solutions to some of those problems, which is what I did while I was in Pfizer, and then, of course, in consulting. That's what I do on a daily basis, engaging people practicing in the retail space, developing solutions to address those issues that that bedevil the practice areas. So right now, I do a lot of work within the industrial and the community space because of where I have commitments. But when we get to that bridge in this meeting, we'll cross it.
Yeah, I was going to say that we're going to really dive into most of those things. So now you had left estate management as Ilaro, and then you are now going into Unilag for pharmacy. So during your period of Unilag for pharmacy, would you say there were any periods that were very monumental that might have also still affected what your outlook was going to be after pharmacy school?
Okay, so if I go back to my Ilaro, I have fun in Ilaro. Ilaro was, you know, it was life as it was, you know, we're down to earth, you know. No swag, nothing, you know. But then, of course, Unilag came calling. Unilag, year one in Akoka was fun. I wasn't the outgoing type, but there were a few interesting things, you know, that happened in Akoka. I think one of them, which I usually like to mention, which ties to my, because it's difficult for you to separate who I am, what I am with my walk with God, you know. In WAEC, I had seven A's and two C's. My two C's, I think, were in physics and economics. I did not like physics, but somehow I passed to physics. And so getting into Akoka, FSF, I can't remember what that course was. Well, 104, physics was 104. FSF 104, I can't remember what that thing was now. And there was this bad young guy, you know, after about two lectures in physics, I stopped going to class. Because like I said, I didn't gel with it, you know. So, but interestingly, there's this physics guy, Badeo. A number of those went to Akoka, I'll know him. He wrote a textbook, we bought it. And then very interestingly, he created a small booklet of a question and answer, about 10, 1 to 50 or something in the series, you know. And he also sold it, which we bought. And so we bought the book, we bought the thing, and for some reasons that I can only ascribe to the God factor, I bought that handout pamphlet, and then I crammed, is the word, the first exercise. So let's say there's 1 to 50, there are 10 sets of the 1 to 50 question, and then at the back there are answers. And so I crammed only the first set of 1 to 50. I didn't bother with the rest. And the questions and the answers. And even though, like, wherever I share this, I always say, don't try this at home. That was the only thing I read into the exam. Believe it or not, that was the only thing that came out in the exam. I finished the exam in less than 20 minutes. Obviously passed. You know, and that could only have been God. And so at that point I decided, okay, taking this God thing more seriously. I thought, God, just keep speaking, I'll keep listening. And then a few things like that have happened, you know, in the course of my life, you know. So from there into Akoka was fun. Sorry, from there, from Akoka into Diaraba was fun. We had fun in there, but a few of the lecturers shaped my who I later became in pharmacy. Professor Hooker, of course, he's a down to earth, jovial, easygoing lecturer, you know, just recently retired. And for me, his lifestyle told me that, look, this life is not hard, just take it easy, you know, because that was the way he carried on. Professor Ifudu and Dr. Gbechi at the time, you know, were always very well packaged, you know, and they gave you that sense of, you know, posh and carriage a pharmacist, you know, should have, you know. Professor Aino, Dr. Olagbende, those were my mothers, you know. They took my matter personal, you know, in training and holding my hands to make sure that I became a well-rounded and balanced professional. One of the major things that also marked my pharmacy student life, you know, was Dr. Olagbende Dada at the time used to work in the church clinic across the road, that Chapel of the Healing Cross, which was the church I attended, you know. In the clinic, because there's a pharmacy unit, I think that was 400 level or so, she drew up a list of 10 of us who will be coming to assist in the clinic, the free clinic runs every Thursday, where people come from all over to access free healthcare. You know, so 10 of us came in, 10 of us started, but in less than a month, there was only one remaining, and that was me. And I did that for 400, for 2 years, you know, so at the end, I think 500 level, the church had to write to the University of Lagos a letter of commendation that well-behaved, blah, 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 you know. But then those are some of the things that shaped my passage through pharmacy school. I went into PANS politics. I was the Secretary General of PANS in my time. And we did a few interesting things while I was there. So essentially that was cool for me, so.
Yeah, great. So, and then you talked about the God factor. For some people, yes, they will see luck, and then, but then how would you say, would you also still say that luck, that God factor has also consistently come on to show itself as you continue to move on? Because I want to understand presently now, how was it like to, after pharmacy school, where was the internship? How was it getting into Pfizer? And how did you move across then?
Okay, so I can't sugarcoat it. I can't call it luck. I can't call it good fortune or whatever. For me, it was God, really, really. And I tell people that there's nothing better for a human being than to have direct access to the voice of God. Once you have it, you live a a practically stressless life, you know, because there's no gambling in the thing, you know. So once, it's just like your phone network. Once the network is not clear, you ask, okay, fine, is this one to know? But once the line is clear and the instruction is clear, there are no two ways about it. And I will explain to you as we move on. In our set, we're the first set that started the COS program. Even though before then, I had on my own gone to do industrial attachment in Nimeth at the time. So I did my IT with Rails. Because of my PANS activity, I got to know the MD of Rails, Pharmacist Adi Popola. And so when we were told to go and look for IT placement, I just called him and said, sir, I want to come and see you. I'm supposed to do IT. You know, it was new at the time, so nobody knew what IT was. So he said, okay, come around. Went to his office. He said, okay, no problem. He called in a man who was the area manager for Lagos, and that man's name was Patrick Aja. Today, Patrick Aja is the managing director of Mayor Maker. And so he says, look, Patrick, take this boy and do whatever you want to meet him. And so Patrick took me. And I worked with Patrick Aja Patrick was the area manager. So I was working with Patrick Aja's reps for that IT period of about 3 months. And it was at that time I knew, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that I was going to be involved in marketing. But not just marketing of multinational products. Because you cannot sell multinational products unless you're intelligent, unless you can discuss intelligently with doctors or pharmacists and all that. So fast forward, NYSC, I'm in Owerri, I'm hustling meaning that by the time I got there, I took products from a family friend who I also got to work closely with during my PANS days. And so he gave me, I just told him, I'm going to Owerri. If I see opportunities there, I'll come and take your products to go and sell in Owerri as your rep. And I ended up selling in Imo, Abia, and the River States as the one-man jungle army there. So well, how does this tie to Pfizer? God rest his soul, Graham Chido Duaka, my very good mentor, passed the race last year. And so we're talking, and one of the Pfizer reps who took me around when I was trying to, you know the market, to know how to build my territory. He just got talking and he said, oh, Patrick Aja is now the commercial, is now the sales director in Pfizer. I was like, Patrick, same Patrick. I'm my Oga now. So I picked the call, and I called and said, Oga, I heard you are the new, so that you're now in Pfizer. Congratulations, this and this. And then just close it there. And then I go back, I finish NYSC, I get back into Lagos. Because I've always loved that break. Remember I said that from secondary school. I was thinking, and something tells me that in my life, I'm still gonna go back into agriculture. I actually went into agriculture while I was a rep in Ibadan. Story for another day. I was selling cows. I had come back from Owerri. I got a job with Cipla Evans in Owerri. But they wanted me to stay in Owerri, but I said, no, I'm coming back home. So I didn't take the job. So you can imagine finishing NYSC, you have a very good job and you don't take it and you come back to Lagos without a job. So here I am in Lagos. I went towards the Lasso area. There's a big cattle market there. I was trying to research cattle farming, you know, I wanted to go to cattle farming. And I came back home in our demo house doing my mathematics. So how will I venture into this farming? Then a call comes in from Patrick Aja. He says, hey, young man, how are you? I'm fine, sir. What are you doing now? So I just came back from service. I'm exploring some agricultural, whatever. So, gentlemen, are you okay? Come and see me in my office. I said, okay, I'll try and come sometime next week. So, are you okay? I said, yes, sir. See me by the end of this week. And so I find myself in Pfizer. We have a discussion. He says they're recruiting reps that I should apply. I applied, went through the interview. And, you know, before then, I had made up my mind never to work in Pfizer. For why? I believe that I believe I struggled through pharmacy school. When I say struggled, it was, you know, what pharmacy school looks like, hectic and all that. Yeah. And then I finally graduated. In those days, for you to join Pfizer, you have to do an exam of all your pharmacy school courses because I always wanted the best. And I was like, I'm not even going to put myself through this torture, so I'll go and look for work elsewhere. Luckily, by the time I was to be interviewed, they had scrapped that recruitment process, and it was more of the regular interview kind of thing that we went through. And so I was taking, and for some reason, I insisted I wanted to go to Ibadan. I don't want to be in Lagos. I wanted to go to a place where I didn't know and make a point to myself. And this is why. I said that when I was in Owerri, I did marketing the jungle style. You know, no training, nothing. I just got to the field and I made good business. I said I wanted to learn marketing the scientific way. You know, there's a science to marketing. And that's why I joined Pfizer. So I said, take me to a place where, you know, I can go and build myself. And I was sent to Ibadan. And after, so that's how I got into Pfizer. I did about 8 years in Pfizer. Less than 3 years after I was on the field, I was promoted to be the first customer relations manager for Pfizer. Interestingly, first and the last. Because there was a new department carved out. And I worked there for about 5 years before I voluntarily retired to what I'm doing now.
Okay, so I really want to get to understand, because you've totally broken it down to the point where you had gone to Owerri, you had already gotten that experience. You were really intentional about getting that amount of experience in marketing and sales. And now you had come back to Pfizer. You had now been doing this marketing role for another 3 years. And after that, you just get promoted into a role that was non-existent before. The role was created probably because of your performance. What exactly did it take to deliver up to that point where the company could say, we need you to be able to do something different? So you probably were introducing something different in the way you were working. You probably were innovating across most of the processes, and that might have been the reason why. So I want to understand, was there a particular reason given for saying, we are bringing about this new role because you have done something, or was it just something that happened like that?
Okay, so it's your questions are triggering some very interesting memories. So first thing, the role was not created for me. Yeah, it was a competitive interview process. More so, I'll put it this way: I was not the best of reps, and I guess a few people who are on this call may struggle with. Piecing what I'm about to say together. I was the best of reps, you know. Ibadan is not a very fertile ground for business, as far as I was concerned, anyway, for the kind of business we were doing compared to other areas. One important thing is that when you are in Ibadan, you are practically working for the whole country. Because you are grooming, people come from all over to do their residency in UCH. UCH is the largest organization there, you know. And then a few of them will only be retained as consultants. So just when the guy has moved from reg to senior reg consultant, he goes back to Kumbi where he came from, or goes back to, you know, KB where he came from. And the result of your work is sometimes difficult to see. That's one thing that made life a bit difficult. What made it easy on me was the fact that I had my own goals and objectives. And so, in having my own goals and objectives, I was more inclined to delivering on my own goals and objectives. And what was it? Selling, understanding the selling process the scientific way. And so, I was also bothered about the volume. I was bothered more about making visible impacts. And so there was a product. There were two products I picked. I was in the anti-infective team. We're selling the antibiotics. There was a product, Unicin, and then there was a product, Dalacin C. And those products were not really doing well. And I felt this is an opportunity for me to prove to myself that I know how to sell. And so for Unicin, after a while, I was on the field. This thing is not selling nationally. The only place I was selling Unicin was in Ilorin, UITH, because that's where the clinical trial was done. I remember coming back to Lagos, picking my Rang and Dale and Lippincott, and studying the concept of beta-lactamase inhibitors and all those things. And I understood it well. And then I created something, a concept called the Battle of Zamunda. You won't believe, don't try this at home if you're a rep or if you don't have what it takes to face the consequences. And I went about, you know, it was, I started my presentations with like a cartoon with an animation of, you know, some stick figures fighting and all. And I said, well, that is the antibiotic resistance we're talking about. And the product is Unicin. And at that time, it coincided with the challenges UCH O&G department was having with amoxicillin clavulanic acid, because the clavulanic acid component of amoxicillin was causing premature rupture of membrane. Couldn't be used with mothers that have premature rupture of membrane because the children will come with necrotizing encephalitis. So those things are still stuck in my head. That was hard work we did back then, you know. And they told me to come and position Zithromax as the drug of choice. I said, no, I have the killer for you. And I brought a Unicin. And I seemed to go for like a jackrabbit, you know, in pediatrics and O&G. So that children were always fighting. Oh, we do more Unicin. Pediatrics had more patients because the child may usually one vial, but O&G had more volume because one mother can use like, you know, four coverage. So those are the things I was doing on the field. I remember setting up what I called the first ever Oyo State Pediatric Roundtable Summit. We had all the pediatricians from all the hospitals coming down and all that. So when the opening came, I applied, I was interviewed with some senior people, some colleagues, and they said I was the best of the lot. So yes, I got that role, and then I took it off from there. So like I said, how does this tie into the thing? There's something you need to be careful as with. You can be promoted, if you're not careful, into incompetence. Do you understand? So some people are fantastic rep, but the moment you promote them to manager, they become disasters. Some people are not so good, but when they get into manager role, they flourish, you know. That's a story for another day. It has more to do with understanding who you are and what your personality traits are. But essentially, that's how I got from the field, enjoying myself, learning what I wanted to learn, because I went in there with an agenda. Remember, what I went in there had a risk. There's something called the employee engagement model. You can Google it on YouTube. You'll find the video there. If I wanted to continue to pursue my passion and the company was at variance with what the company wanted, I would have had to leave the organization or the organization would kick me out. But interestingly, we're able to find an area of mutual interests and continue to forge on, such that when I got into that role, the Pfizer-friendly pharmacy project was already on, and so I took it up as part of my work. And then myself and my boss, pharmacist Judah Bonu, who I believe right now is still the managing director of Novo Nordisk, the economy manager for Novo Nordisk Nigeria, we created what we call today the Customer Care Bootcamp. And it took me around the continent of Africa, training pharmacists and counter assistants on the topic of customer service.
So you've mentioned a number of things about how pharmacists can really succeed in marketing role. You've said it's important to actually know yourself and then be able to develop personal key performance indexes, because you have said it, you have to have a goal for yourself on your own, aside what the organization has set out to. Okay, so are there any other things you think would be very important for people who are in sales and marketing to really hone in terms of skills to be able to succeed and thrive in those sectors? You have also said that a person could really be good as a rep or not so good as a manager, or maybe good as a manager and not so good as a rep. But what really can enable someone in sales marketing itself to succeed as compared to the other roles? What essential skills are required, especially in today's market, where you see that a lot of things has even moved to marketing, away from direct marketing. Now we're even seeing social media and things like that are coming in. And how exactly can people succeed around those roles in today's system?
So the first thing I'll say is to thyself be true. Know who you are, and you need to understand your personality traits, and there are a number of materials out there you can use Marcus Buckingham is very big on strengths. If you can read the works of Marcus Buckingham, I think I have a few of them in my library here. So this is Marcus. I think this is his first book. Yeah. Okay, so this is Marcus' first book is First Break All the Rules. Then there is The One Thing You Need to Know About Great Managing, Great Leading, and Sustained Individual Success. Then there is Now Discover Your Strength. And then here, there is Go Put Your Strengths to Work. Now, all these are materials. So, from what you can see behind me, you have to be a voracious reader. You have to continue to develop. You have to continue to develop yourself to be able to deliver in the world of today. But one thing as a rep you need to be able to understand is there are two major areas in the marketing process. There's the sales and there's the marketing. Now, if you are someone who you are a striker, you are a, I'm not too much of a football fan, but you are a Lukaku, you are a, let me look at Nigerian balance, I think you are an Igalo. You are a sharp shooter. Once you get your targets, you are looking at it and say, okay, fine, let's hit the field. And then you know the four people you are going to go and talk and rap and do and create deals for. And so you are most likely tilting towards a sales, core sales role. But if you are more of the tactical person, once you get that target, you are thinking, okay, I need to go and influence this person. I need to go and trigger this. I need to create demand. I need to go to the young pharmacist group. I need to talk to them, you know, so that they are going out or because they are, you know, if you think in that web network kind of manner, you most likely are tailored more for the marketing side. Marketing side is more of the strategic side, you know. So that as a sales rep, you do everything, but as you grow into management, you then need to decide whether you're going to go into sales management, which is people management, or marketing management, which is more strategy. You know, so that's one thing I'd like the reps to know and begin to look at themselves again to say, where do I naturally gravitate towards? You know, so once you're able to know that, then it's a bit easier for you to make up your mind what to do. At the time we were leaving, I was leaving the field, I was getting tired. Getting tired because the morality was getting to a very, very low ebb. Because remember, I was working for a multinational. You didn't have money to do any, even if you were not the righteous type. You didn't have money to settle anybody. But we're getting to stages where corruption was beginning to be institutionalized, where doctors will be asking for payment, to be asking for gifts, for them to prescribe your product, you know. And people were doing it all over the place. I said, no, I can't cope, you know. So luckily, I was delivered when I was moved to the head office. And so, for those of us who are still on the field now, it is very, very important for us to decide, because that would be a deliberate decision, for us to decide to be upright. And if you, sometimes it may be difficult because the corruption may be fed from the organization you're working in, you know, so at that point, just call on your God to give you direction, because at that point, I may not be able to help you.
Going from the last line, you were talking about direction, and you kind of mentioned it earlier in that in moving away from Pfizer and even moving away from anywhere, you need to be able to know when interests probably do not align, or you want to be able to move into something else that interests you a lot more. So in an interview you had with Farming News at the time you were leaving Pfizer, you did mention that there was not so much money in your pocket at that time to be able to do the kind of projects you wanted to do. And with the projects that you have done after you left Pfizer, they are massive, massive, huge projects.
And with what you said, there was not so much money. There was no money that you were going to fall back on to say, this is what I'm going to use. How exactly did you navigate that process? Why was it very so important for you at that time to say, I want to move, I want to do this thing, even when the financial resource did not look like it was existent at that time?
Okay, there we go again, back to the God factor. So, how did I leave? I worked for 8 years, and I practically didn't have 6-7 years plus. And I looked at my account. I mean, I was okay, you know. But I looked at my account. There was nothing stashed up in my account, and I was like, "Now, this will be good to go." So I told God, I said, look, this next year, I think that was in 2012. I said, look, I want to save up an amount. Let me not confuse people with the amount. I said, I want to save up an amount, you know. And God helped me that year. I hustled, I did side runs, I did everything. And when I pieced all the money scattered all over the place together, I actually got that amount. Now hold that thought and let's go back to University of Lagos, Garaba. I used to attend the Christian Fellowship International, I believe. And I was preaching a sermon one day, and I asked a question. I said, how much would you need to give? Let me use a figure now, so that I usually don't like using the figure, the actual figure, because it will confuse people. Let's use 1 billion. Ask people, how much the student audience, how much would you need to have in your account to give God 1 billion? You know, people said, if I have 10 billion, I'll give God 1 billion. If I have 100 billion, I'll give God 1 billion. Maybe I have 2 billion, I'll give God 1 billion. And I said, no, all you need to give God 1 billion is to have 1 billion. You will give him everything you have. He said, I said, yes. You know, sometimes you just talk flippantly, you don't know where God will use it against you. And so after this 2012, God had helped me, and I had saved up that amount. And December just tapped me on the shoulder. I said, my son. I said, my God. I said, remember you told those people, the hall was destiny all that time. I can remember. You know, when certain things happen, you remember every detail. I said, which one? He said, if you have 1 billion, you give me 1 billion. You remember the 1 billion is a fictitious amount. So that amount I said there correlated with the amount I said I wanted to save. She said, now you have the 1 billion. Give me. Nearly said, get behind me, sister. And so I gave it all. No man of God did an altar call. No, there was nothing dramatic. I mean, by myself, I wrote the check and I put it there and it went. And then January, I said, well, let's see how it goes. But then also, I belong to this group of, I don't know, I call them fanatics, so people are not feeling fine. People that believe in first fruits, you know. I don't argue those things. It's whatever you and your God agree on, you know. And so remember, I'd given everything I had, in quotes, away. And then generally, you're supposed to start rebuilding your life again. Remember that, end of January, you have to give everything again, you know. And so I did. And so I entered February. I wasn't broke. I was broken in February. Nothing. And then he now spoke in February. I said, it's time to leave. Wow. You may not understand. You may not understand, but that time I had a young wife and a baby. He said, I had to leave. So I said, okay, yes. Lord. I mean, when you that you hear, leave, give you everything, you know. So I said, yeah, but I wanted to make it memorable. So I said, look, I'll leave on my birthday so that I don't confuse it. You know, I know the day I left. I left May 11, 2013, when I clocked 33, you know. And that was why I left. But what was I leaving to? nothing. Because there was nothing, it wasn't planned like that, you know. So, and I liken it to what God told Abraham, you know, when he said, go to a place, I will show you. He didn't tell him you are going here. He just said, just be going. So I packed my things and I left. But remember, I said we created the customer care boot camp while I was in Pfizer. So I said, well, as part of scripture, I said, let the man say I was the one who made Abraham rich. You know, I took all the at some point I had to buy materials and all that to create the training courses. I handed everything over to the manager who was going to be taking up my role. I gave everything back to him to say, before you say, is it a Pfizer material to go and use to create? I gave, left everything behind. I used to teach selling skills. I used to teach customer service as customer insurance manager. I left Pfizer and I created new, remember I was the one that created it, so I knew how to create modules. I created selling skills modules. And then we started off, bam, took off like a jackrabbit. So that's what we started with. In the transition between February and May, I already started discussing with, I remember it was Dr. Milan Bridge, the idea came for Farm Alliance, and then I started piecing it all together. You know, I left, I pushed out messages and all that, you know, for people to come and join Farm Alliance. I'd been doing some consulting, you know, clients in retail pharmacy, I was going to, you know, paying small change here and there, using it to whole body and all those things. So then a few people always say, come and train my people, come and, so I just gathered all of them together and then sent messages out for people to come and, you know, listen to the Farm Alliance message. And guess how many people came after I sent messages to about 100 plus people. About 40 said they were, 30 or 40 said they were interested, only 10 showed up on the day. And that was information session. And then I think sometime in September or November 2013, the same year I left, we started Farm Alliance. And it's been moving from there. I had started Panel earlier. Panel is older than Farm. Panel actually gave birth to Farm Alliance. This year we're doing the 14th edition of Panel. But the interesting thing was when we started Panel, it was just like an idea I had. You know, I came back into Lagos fresh. I had learned a lot at the feet of Isabella Adekunle in Ibadan. And I found out that there was a difference between successful community pharmacists and unsuccessful ones. You know? So, and it was a big knowledge gap, and I wanted to fill it. And so I invited him. That November, I met Bukie George. No, sorry. That November I got into Lagos. I met Bukie George at a program where I anchored for Alps. She was speaking. We struck it off. There's another, God rest his soul, Richard Dyer Johnson. I met him through Professor Larry Ballo, a strong mentor of mine. And then Charles Omoriga, you know. And I invited them and we started this program called the Panel. And because I was working with established names, they could not be associated with things that were not straightforward, you know. So how can you be working in a company and all that? So I had to be running Panel during my leave time. I couldn't be running Panel on Pfizer time. So imagine working all through the year and the 2 weeks that you have to rest, you're using it to host a conference. But then all baby steps, we thank God for what those projects have become today. So probably if you have time one-on-one, we can then discuss the individual projects. But I can see time is racing against us. So let's move.
Yeah, so I really want to get from a life from a force presently, because he said
I didn't know.
you identified that gap that was there for a lot of pharmacies, and that gap is still even presently there. For some pharmacies, they're not, they just remain where they are. They don't get to the point where they can scale, at the point where some people don't even know when they break even and things like that, and those very intricate things around business. So why was it really important to do that? And how has that metamorphosed from where you started at the point where Farm Alliance started in 2013 till today? What has really changed? What lessons have you learned along that process? And then for especially young pharmacists that probably want to start pharmacy businesses now,
how can they go about that? How can they use some of those lessons to ensure their businesses are thriving, like those businesses that are under Farm Alliance presently?
So I won't say Farm Alliance businesses are thriving. No. All we have in Farm Alliance are people with a different mindset, people who are committed to developing themselves, no matter what it costs. That's what we have in Farm Alliance. So it's not like, oh, by the time you get to every Farm Alliance pharmacy, you are going to see everything, all the bling bling. No. We understand that we are work in progress, and we are committed to putting in that work to become better businesses. You know, so it's not a cheap group to belong to. It costs, as of today, I don't know, you may be watching this recording some 20 years from now, but as of today, it costs 300,000 naira to be a member of Farm Alliance. That's 25,000 naira a month. In Nigerian naira, it's not so cheap, you know. But we started, like I said, as 10 people. Gradually, the numbers began to improve. More people began to join the network. When we began to have things to show, people started saying, oh, where did you learn that? Oh, Farm Alliance, and then it started coming. About 5-6 years ago, we opened a branch. And another group was opened in Ibadan. We call them the Rock City Group. And Ibadan right now, I think, has about 16 to 20 businesses within that network. Then COVID came, and COVID was supposed to be a disruptor to business, but it worked for us. Because we normally, as Farm Alliance, we meet every month, apart from, so we give, so Farm Alliance is the business network. We support the businesses. So it's not pharmacists that join Farm Alliance, it's pharmaceutical businesses, retail pharmacies that join. You know, so we provide them with basic things they should have, insurance, accounting support, and then business development support, you know. So when COVID came, we meet every month to discuss the business of retail. COVID came, we couldn't meet anymore, so we went online. And so because we went online, all of a sudden, everybody from every part of the country wanted to join Farm Alliance, now had the opportunity to join. And so we opened up what we call the Star Membership. So today we have members in Benin, we have members in Uyo, we have members in Calabar, we have members in Port Harcourt, we have members in Abuja, we have members in Benue. They connect to our meetings virtually. So when we meet virtually, they are there. When we meet physically, we stream our meetings live so that they don't miss anything. And so the number has continued to grow. When we look at store count, when we look at individual businesses, we are about 80-something businesses in Farm Alliance. But remember, we count Net Pharmacy as one, Alpha Pharmacy as one. But when we look at our store network, our store footprint is in excess of 200 stores across the country. And so that's what Farm Alliance is. And our objective is simple, just to improve the practice landscape. You know, let's not say it cannot be done. And so we have this group of people who are willing to dare, who are willing to challenge. You know, every month we have a book that we are reviewing, you know. We are deliberately pushing ourselves, you know, to improve ourselves. And we are glad to see that we are beginning to have some very solid fruits to show for the efforts we are putting in. And so Farm Alliance is not about me. Farm Alliance is about the network. You know, we have this activity we call peer review. People go around to other pharmacies, you know. So we put ourselves in groups of four, and then you go visiting yourselves. You know, best practice sharing, you know. But our community is very, very good at that, and they are exploding in their numbers, you know. So that's it. For a young pharmacist who wants to go into the retail pharmacy space, you're welcome. It's just, number one, you need to know what you're doing. You need to learn. There's a science and arts to retail. You can't just wake up and jump into it and all that, you know. You spoke about, they don't know their break-evens. While I was in Pfizer alongside my colleague, Willie Sorene, he's a Kenyan, we built this tool called the Retail Break-Even Calculator, Rebecca. And that goes a long way in. It's a first step in you even knowing what you should be doing as a community pharmacist, as regards your numbers. If you visit the Farm Alliance website, farmalliance.com.ng, under the resources or materials section, the free materials, because there are member materials that you can have access to, and then the public materials. Under the free materials section, you'll be able to download the Rebecca. It's an Excel-based tool, and then use it to improve yourself, basically.
Because of our want of time, I'll just quickly maybe jump into something else, which is Moxie, and it's the pillow just behind you. So what brought about that baby? What brought about baby Moxie? How did the idea come?
Okay, so remember, like I said, when I was going to Magasaka, I would only sell multinational products because they are good, they are top quality. I remember, I said I got the Supply Advance job and I didn't take it. I remember when we were put, the last stage of the interview was we were put into groups, we would pick, not groups, I was supposed to pick something and speak. And then I picked something, it had to do with products. And I remember what I said at the time, which has been a guiding philosophy, is to say, look, if you go into a pharmacy and you pick two products, an imported product and a Nigerian product, you can always tell which one is Nigerian, which one is imported, just by the look and feel. And so I felt we needed to address that frontally. So as part of my work, Moxie is going to be three. Moxie, hey, whoa, we missed our birthday. We forgot our birthday. Moxie was 3 years old a few days ago. Yeah. So we there was a big issue like 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and the issue is still there. They clamped down on NAFDAC against people that were selling unregistered imported products. Carpol, Tylenol, all those beautiful products you want to make that make your pharmacy look beautiful.
Yeah.
There was a major clampdown. Now that's you can't be selling them, and all that. And I was involved with a few people, New Heights, name it, engaging NAFDAC and all that. And I just asked a simple question. Why are people going for Carpol and everything? It's, I said, so Moxie entirely was a product of a rebellion. To say, look, whatever those brands have, we will create it locally and we will push it locally. That's what gave birth to Moxie. And so we picked paracetamol and vitamin C because based on research, those were products that had very good volumes. And then the products that also had very high imports, even though they were banned, imports was banned, but people were still smuggling them in. And so we built a product from the scratch to tell the Nigerian story. What do I mean? That product was designed, the pack was designed by a Nigerian, creative prowess, a martial artist. He designed the pack. The product is produced locally. Today it's produced by Oak Faith Pharmaceuticals, Lagos Abuja Expressway. We had an option of going with some naturalized multinational, but we said no, we wanted to tell a Nigerian story. I mean, that may change later, but at least to make that initial point, we did that. And then we said, okay, what does Carpol have? So this is we call this our limited edition. This limited edition of Moxie. So this is the paracetamol. So what does Carpol have? Carpol has child resistant cap. We went for child resistant cap. Because I believe we are the only local organization that produces product with child resistant caps in Nigeria. Maybe there's one or two of them, I don't know, but this is it. What else? Oh, he has syringe. Oh, we also have syringe and adapter, So we had to engineer the product to meet global best practices. To say, what do they have? Yes, we have. And the feedback from customers has been overwhelming. The acceptance has been great. So this is vitamin C. This is vitamin C. Also CRC cap. Now, let me tell you something about being deliberate in brand design. There is no, to the best of my knowledge, there is no local product that has this cup. Most of them have that tiny cup. Well, fine, it sits on their aluminum caps very well. But for some that cannot sit on, they just drop that little cup in the pack. We said, no, we won't do that. We went and we got this. This thing that looks inconsequential is about without being without exaggerating, it's at the minimum 10 times the price of that little one. But it's the price to pay for the brand we are creating. You know, so that's this Moxie story. Like I said, it's a story of rebellion. We are saying, look, Nigeria is not as bad as you make it look. Yeah, go to Canada, go to UK, go to Australia, wherever you want to go. But in Nigeria, yeah, things are bad, but not as bad as we can't create world standard product. And that's the story of Moxie. Today, we have four line extensions in the works. We have, so Moxie, this male and female actually are already pregnant. And in a few months' time, we are going to be having four line extensions of Moxie. Is it easy? No. What a product, a company that doesn't have a manufacturing or marketing track record, launching a product that is, you know, for most of the product, there's a general price category. When we launched, paracetamol was being sold for, I think, when we scale up about 200 naira, we launched at 500 naira, more than double the price of even the market leader. And our price keep going up because we cannot compromise quality. And you know, Jolla is nowhere to be found, you know. Our APIs come from Europe, our flavors come from Europe. Whatever you are taking in Moxie, you know you're taking the world best standard. And so it's not the cheap and cheerful bottom of the pyramid product. No, it's a product for those who want quality. And very interestingly, we are finding a good number of Nigerians who want quality and are willing to pay for quality, no matter the price. That's the Moxie story. Watch out for the next 4 million.
We totally cannot wait for those babies that are coming. And like you talked about branding, the first time I ever saw Moxie on a shelf of a community pharmacy, I wouldn't have guessed that it was a Nigerian product, because I picked it up and I'm like, this cannot be a Nigerian product. One thing I do when I see new products, most of the times, okay, I go check the manufacturer, I check where it's coming from. And everything was really intentional. With this Moxie story, how can people also still use this and intentionally brand themselves, creating a specific identity for themselves and then owning that identity?
For branding, you have to be intentional. There is a price to pay, a huge price. So number one, you need to be sure you want to run the, you want to play that game. That's the first thing you need to be sure of. Is this something I want to do? Branding is about consistency. One of the very first books I bought on branding, I saw it recently. Branding 101. I saw that thing, the brand you. I saw that thing, some things they do in my life. I bought this far back as when I was in the bank. I'm trying to go, I'll find it somewhere, you know. And you have to be deliberate. You have to be intentional. You have to be, one of the things about brand, you have to be consistent. The moment I taste you today, you say, oh, I have the best Zobo drink. I taste you today, there's sugar. Tomorrow, there's no sugar. It is aspartame you put there. The next day, you are not a brand. Branding is about consistency. If you want to be stupid consistently. That's your brand. You know, if you want to be seen as an intellectual, it's your brand. You know, you have to be focused about what you are trying to project. That is when people will take you for who you are. I used to anchor events a lot, but at the time I started training, I had to transition from anchoring to training. Do you understand? So it doesn't happen to you by luck. So when we have a Moxie, for instance, and but like I was going to say, what does it take to design that pack? We have many graphic artists in Nigeria, but we can design a beautiful pack and then take it to a rubbish producer of the pack.
Printer.
You know, so but for us, we manage every step of the way, from the person producing the pack and everything, the CRC caps and everything. We monitor the process to be sure that when you take it, you just must feel the thing. Have we had issues along the way? Of course, we've had issues, you know, production issues, quality issues, you know, from, you know, this, well, I mean, when you are producing liquids, leakage and all this thing will always happen, you know. But there are times they go beyond the acceptable limits. You just backtrack, look at it, something called CAPA, corrective action, preventive action, put it in place, and then you keep moving. And so you have to be consistent. You have to be deliberate about the brand. So you need to even know what you're trying to project as a brand. Are you a cheap and cheerful product? Sometimes you start as cheap and cheerful, then you want to move to something else, or you start as expensive and then want to downgrade. It is usually very difficult. That is why Mercedes, I want to remember the brand, Louboutin, Christian Louboutin, you know those shoes? Those shoes with the red, there are a number of them. Yes, there are a number of them. I've read about 3 or 4 of them. Everything they do not sell in a year, they destroy. They don't do sales, they don't do promotions. Once they don't sell it, they destroy it. To tell you that one that you have, know that it's a prized possession. And it's the same thing that's happening with our conference, the panel. We've built that conference painstakingly for 14 years. Today, people know what they are coming for at the panel, such that this year, panel is coming up in August. This interview is taking place in April. We have totally sold out our sponsorship slots. Companies are asking for more, but we will not do more. I mean, I was at the venue some days ago, and the vendor that was said, oh no, we can put this board here, put this board here. I said, no, this is not a market. No, you must still enter the panel and know that yes, you are in a world-class conference. That's about being deliberate. And that's something a young pharmacist must be able to attach to himself, a brand. Let them say, Nelson, leave Nelson, John. Nelson does not do all these things we do. No, I call him now. He speaks very, at least he can, you know, let him just write, you know, he will write and then we'll put it. I said, no, if Nelson, that guy has too much integrity. He does not play with his name. That is the brand, you know. Oh, this guy, go and check his trousers. He's always 90-degree gait or whatever. If you do it consistently, it becomes your brand. And when your brand is built, people pay the premium you charge as a brand. I'm not sure how many other webinars people will pay 20K, 25K for to attend. Either you attend physically or you attend virtually. If you attend virtually, you pay for the virtual access. And people pay because of the value we are committed to giving.
I want to explore an extra layer, and that layer is okay. on the level of personal branding. So for people who have looked at themselves, they are somewhat generalists, for example. How is it possible? How can they really niche down to be able to still create a brand around being a generalist?
Bro, okay, so let me take it this way. I will circle around. So there's this thing I teach about making money. I talk about money. People want to have money, but you never make money unless you deliver value. You can never deliver value unless you are providing a solution. You can never call what you have a solution unless it solves a problem. Right? Now, so let me go from the solution and then dive down. Let me drill down a bit. I've not done this before, but your question is making me think through this process. Usually when you are delivering a solution, it comes as a product. And I use product generally. It can be a product or a service that is the solution. Now, when you now have that product, you can therefore it to have a higher value. You build it into a brand. So this brand we are talking about is tied to delivering a solution at a value. So I give it back to you now, probably to clarify, that generalist, what problem is he solving? So if he's solving a general problem, what is that general problem? Unless that problem is defined, then you cannot be a brand or be a solution. So let me clarify. Marriott restaurant solves hunger problem. Amala streets, Abino streets, whatever those Amala bookers are, they solve hunger problems, but they solve different types of hunger problems. Let me know use Marriott. Marriott can be a bit complicated to explain. Chinese restaurant and that Amala joint, they both solve problems, they are both brands, but they solve different problems. The Chinese restaurant, you don't go and eat in the Chinese restaurant when you are hungry. You are eating at home before you go to the Chinese restaurant. And 30 minutes after you leave the Chinese restaurant, I can promise you'll be hungry again. How much is it? Very expensive. If you go there as a couple, you'd go like 30 or 40,000 naira less when you're coming out. But for the Amala joint, with 2,000 naira, 3,000 naira, you're good. Probably be more food than this other one. But this one gives you packaging that goes with it. Okada is a brand. It is for fast transportation from point A to point B. Cadillac will also move you from point A to point B, but Cadillac is not into fast movement. Cadillac is into luxurious locomotion. When you are in a Cadillac, when you get to the car park, you do not come down till people gather because don't see who is coming out. So where am I going? The brand must narrow down to the kind of problem it is solving. When you're able to know that problem, then you can build your brand around solution to that problem.
Okay, so to go further into what I meant also, okay, still, that you need to identify, for example, I am known for this particular thing.
Okay.
And I am known to do it this particular way. What if you're a person that is able to do it in numerous ways? Is it important to say I am going to do it just one specific way, or still be a brand that is able to do it in those numerous ways at the same time still?
Yes. So your brand can be that you can handle issues in many ways, you know. So probably you're a consultant. Bring your problems any which way will solve it. You may have a preferred way, but then you are able to do it in other ways. And when you're doing it in other ways, you are still good at it. I mean, there's room for generalists. Not everybody will be a zoning specialist. There are people who are able to, just like in medicine, you have general practitioners. Unfortunately, in pharmacy is one, community pharmacy is one place where I see that most people are generalists. You know, but right now I'm seeing some deliberate activity in towards specialization. You know, but assuming there were pediatric community pharmacists, there were cardiovascular community pharmacists, you know. The generalists, yes. So just like, so let me go back to medicine, where it's more entrenched. In medicine, you have the GP. The GP sees everybody. Yeah, the GP can be a brand. Oh, he's very versatile. Whether it's head or neck or leg or the guy can diagnose you, he can push you so far. But even with the general, it gets to a point, it says, oh, you need to see a specialist, and then refers you upwards. And so when you're a generalist, as a young pharmacist, your generalist nature helps you handle so many things. And so you may find yourself in environments where you are you're like a handyman. Oh, the bulb is not working, I'll fix it. Oh, the tile is cracked, oh, I'll fix it. That's a brand, yes. Oh, you're the go-to guy. You are the, I can't remember which of the books now, one of these Malcolm Gladwell books. You are the connector, you are the maven, you know. Oh, you know everybody. Oh, I'll talk to Nelson. Even if he doesn't know, he'll sort you out. Yeah, it's a brand, yeah. And you can build around that. You are the networker, you are the guy who has everything on top of his fingers. Oh, Nelson, I want to see the DJ now. DJ, okay. Give me 2 minutes, I'll find a way. Yeah, so that's a brand. You are the go-to person. A generalist brand, yes. Yeah, so I believe that answers your question.
Yeah, that definitely answers the question now, because I know a lot of time we talk about niche down, but it's still, I still felt like it was important to still have some people that are able to combine a lot of things and still offer that. I want us to look at the recruitment landscape, which is something you're actively involved in presently. So you started RX Evolution in those early years.
Yeah.
And then RX Evolution has evolved to now be to now become Pharma Jobs in partnership with PSNYPG. Yeah. So I want to see what your thoughts is around how young pharmacists can really balance what the current economic situation is in Nigeria, the economic landscape, and then their expectations in terms of pay from the perspective of the community pharmacies, because community pharmacies should also be able to generate and be a business that can support what they are paying. So how can young pharmacies balance that to see this is the economic landscape, this is what might be possible to come from those businesses, and this is how I want to approach either going into this part of pharmacy?
You want to shake some tables now, and I think I'll help you shake them well. All right, so how did we start? We had gotten at that time to a position where when you wanted to post a vacancy, you will go to the secretariat for Lagos now. You go to Ogudan, paste it on the notice board, and the young pharmacists will travel down and go and look on the notice board for vacancies. But then social media started coming in. Young pharmacists no longer knew the way to the secretariat. The employers were having an issue reaching the young pharmacists. And so we came up with a simple solution at the time. I actually started as a Facebook page, you know. We got the vacancies, and then we put it on Facebook, and then young pharmacists go there. And believe me, it was working like magic, such that after a while, after Facebook showed us, you know, with the algorithm, whatever, showed us one time, two time, we felt, look, it's time to migrate to our own website so we can control our destiny, still pushing the communication on Facebook. So BetaRx Evolution continued to be a wonder. But then all of a sudden, the response rate has crashed. And it was at that point we felt, okay, let's engage YPG and rebrand this solution. So that probably the younger pharmacists are not seeing these vacancies. So probably let's have YPG. And we have a good working relationship with YPG, but can I say something? We are still not getting the responses. And people have kept asking me, what is the problem? I said, I don't know. For those who attended the panel last year, we actually set up a panel session where the then YPG chair, Yemeka Ogbons, and then the current YPG chair, Ethel Limba, were at the conference, and they spoke. But then we are still not getting to the root of it. Our last Farm Alliance meeting for April, was held at Radisson Blue. I intentionally invited the YPG secretary for Lagos State, who owns a retail pharmacy, you know, and just to come and engage and see what we do in a mentoring capacity. This issue came up, and I invited him, come and talk to us, let us know what the issues are. Unfortunately, we are yet to get to the issues. We are hearing that, young pharmacists are not going into tech, they're not going to, half of them are running out of the country and all that. But let me answer your question, what can you do? Let me be the first to admit to two things. We have young pharmacists that have been irresponsible and rascally. On one hand, we have business owners that have been irresponsible and I don't know which other word to use. So there are people who have done wrong on both sides. In the same vein, I have a number of young pharmacists that are wonderful, capital W, wonderful. You know, I've worked with them. They are great. I have business owners who are pearls, who are incubators, who can't wait to grow the next generation. So we have the good and bad on both sides. Now, let me focus on the young pharmacists, because I'm actually always working on the owner side to make sure that their pharmacies are places where young pharmacists are allowed to express themselves. For the young pharmacists, there's nothing wrong with you asking for ₦1 million a month. I tell your business owners, if they want ₦1 million enough, pay them as long as they can earn it. And so for young pharmacists, what value are you bringing to the table? It's an issue of the chicken and the egg. it is the issue of the footballer that wants a sign-on fee. Will you play so that I can see what you can play and then pay you, or you want me to pay you ahead of you being able to demonstrate what you can play? I believe as a young pharmacist, you reserve the right to ask for whatever you think you are worth. But please note that what you think you are worth, the business must also be able to see the value you say you have and tap that value. And so you shouldn't be afraid of performance-based incentives. So what does that mean? This pharmacy says, oh, I can only pay you 100,000 naira, 70,000 naira. So no problem. But sir, if I grow this business from the 1 million to 3 million, will you increase my salary to 200,000? We need to have that discussion. Once that discussion is had, then you can get to work. Is it possible that you get have that agreement and then your employer disappoints? Of course, we are all human beings. Like I said, remember, we also have people who are not so credible on both sides. You know, because for you, we've had young pharmacists do very interesting, crazy things. We've also had business owners do very interesting, crazy things, you know. But then I always believe in that oasis of excellence that can happen, which is why when we were at the panel last year, there was a lot of, I said, let Ethel, who eventually became your YPG chair, I said, let her talk, let her be, because she has shown herself to be an example of that kind of young pharmacist you are looking for. And there are many out there. Interestingly, I guess I've only encountered the number of bad young pharmacists I've encountered, I can count on one hand. But then I have many, many, many fantastic ones who I'm still working very closely with, very closely. You know, so it's for you to be able to demonstrate the value you are bringing to the table. Remember the flowchart that I showed you before. You want money when you go to that pharmacy. The money you want can only be gotten when you deliver value. The value is only proportional to the size of the solution you are bringing to the table. So you enter into a pharmacy, they don't have a nutrition program, they don't have a diabetic self-care program, they don't have this, they don't have that. Come into the organization, demonstrate value, create those programs, show the commercial viability, make money for the pharmacy, and then you can then begin to ask. I understand perfectly where the young pharmacist is coming from, believe me. What if I do all that and then they still don't pay? Don't worry. You don't like to hear this thing, but that's the only language I know. When I was working, let me tell you a practical example. I was a rep in Ibadan. My manager loved me. Right now, she's in the UK. And we had a discussion in the office one day, and she told me, you know, this is, and I said, madam, you know you guys are not paying me. She said, no, you are paid. I said, madam, I think then at the time, I was earning less than 60,000. I had a driver I was paying from the salary I was being paid. And she said, you know, convince me. If you can convince me that this is what you earn, I will tell you, advise you to resign. After I finished my advice, she said, well, yeah, wait now, don't resign. What am I trying to say? She appreciated the value I was bringing to the table. I was not working for the money. Remember, I went there with an agenda to improve myself. And everything I am today is from that work I've put in. Young pharmacist, first thing I'll tell you, calm down. Just calm down. The world is in your favor. You need to, things are moving very fast. And the people who run businesses today do not understand how things work. You are the guys that understand social media. You are the guy that understands NFTs. You are the guys that understand the metaverse. You are the guys that understand this. What you should be looking at is how can we bring the current state into the new state? A young pharmacist, I won't give you a son, but my name is Jalapo. She reached out to me recently and she was like, oh, social media. I said, look, the first thing you need to do is to a test of concepts. You want to build social media plan? Forget money. Don't look for money. Look for somebody who is stupid enough to give you his business to test run. Today, I see the work she's doing with one of the pharmacists I gave her to work with. Of course, the guy is, if he won't decide that, he's paying her already. She's making money. We're going to have an engagement in the next few weeks. And all I'll be teaching her at that point is how to package this one you have done so that others can pay you. Imagine having maybe one pharmacy paying you don't charge more, charge 50k, but you're working in the comfort of your house. And you can easily manage the social media handles of 8 pharmacies. That is 400k sleeping in your house. You have to be creative. You can do it for your pharmacy. So how do you start? You can start with your pharmacy. Say, sir, we don't have a website. We don't have a social media handle. Can I do this for the pharmacy? Once you have demonstrated value, today you say you are going, they'll be begging you to stay. Value is the name of the game. Most of us are impatient, want it now. And I don't blame you. You live in a Davido whiskey generation where you're talking of 30 billion gang. Where you're talking of this, oh, you just go online. We need to calm down. Learn what we should learn. Or else, when you rise up very fast, the day they call for depth within you, you don't have anything to show.
You have succinctly answered the question. Like, you have gone really in depth. So let's just go back to you now, and then we'll begin to close out from there. So are you able to share any career wins and failures that you might have had? And why would you consider them to have been wins and failures? So one win, one failure, and then why do you consider it as that?
Career wins and failures. I'm not sure what I'll categorize a win or what I'll categorize a failure. Because for me, failures are learning opportunities for me. I told you I've sold cows before. For me, career, I don't know that I'm a career pharmacist, you know. So if it's a career in consulting, entrepreneurship and all that, I've had my failures. My first major business failure. And by the way, I've also sold shirts. I've made shirts. So as a student, I was selling shirts to bankers. Not selling. I wasn't buying shirts. I was making shirts and selling to bankers. Do I have know how to sew? No. I go to the market, pick materials. All I knew how to do then was to take measurements. Pick materials, go to the bank, pick orders. The tailors were in the market. That's not good there. So career failure. So after selling shirts, I told you I went into cows. In Kara, in Akinyele, in Ibadan, in the cattle market there, I had a stand. Early in the morning, my driver will pick me by 5 a.m. We'll drive down to Akinyele, you know, as cows are coming from the north, we'll buy cows and everything. You know, I have an ID card.
Let me see if I can. This is the first time I'll be showing that found it.
See. Nelson, can you see?
Yes.
I've never shown this before. Association of Cattle Dealers, Oyo State. So I'm not lying. So I did that business for a few months. I invested, was it 100 or 200,000? I think it was 200. Where did I get the money from? I borrowed it from my sister, who was a banker at the time. And I gave it to the guys we're partnering with. You know, my driver was the one that knew the guys, you know. And in my very before, 200 became 180, 150, 120, 100. When I got there, when I got this, I just said, how much do you have this? I said, give me the 70,000. And that was the last I saw my money. What was the lesson I learned from that business experience? Don't invest or don't do a business you do not understand. So now people come to me today, hey, there's this investment. Agricultural something. Network. I said, I'm not doing. Crypto. What's the sort of thing that they are doing? Forex. I said, I'm not doing. Leave me. Whatever I do not understand, I do not invest in. So that for me, it was not a failure. It was just a learning point that has helped me all through my career. Career wins. I don't know what I'll call a win, because I guess I've been winning all the way. What would be a career win? I don't know. I believe a lot in having fun. Whatever I don't enjoy, I don't do. And so I believe I've been enjoying myself, and so I've been doing more of what I enjoy. But for low, maybe that's one, but it wasn't a low. It was a major learning that has helped me. I lost money there, but it had prevented me from losing more money in the future. It's not a win. Okay, Maybe the launch of Moxie is a win, but if I call launching 2 SKUs a win, what happens when we now have 20 SKUs, a winner? So,
I guess that would just be more wins.
Okay, more wins. Okay, all right.
All right, so can you sum up the best career advice you might have received in 7 to 10 words?
I can't sum it up, but one advice I got as a student, I sometimes have a photographic memory. As a student, was I remember very vividly Lagos Airport Hotel. I was a student. I attended a PSN function, and I was sitting beside pharmacist Abbas Sambo, then still now in Swifa. And he told me something. He said, "You know, when you finish, make sure you go and rep. That when you go and rep, after 2 years, the language you are speaking will be very different from the language of your colleagues that did not rep." And I guess I took the advice. And that's probably has helped shape my career. I'm not saying anybody should go and rep. But what he was trying to tell me then was when you are a rep, you engage, you see a lot of things. You see doctors, you see pharmacists, you know business, you know. Your thinking is challenged. And at the end of the day, you become a better person. So that was one career advice that I believe worked for me. If I'm to advise the younger generation now, I will say to thyself, be true. Know who you are, know what you want. More importantly, know what you don't want. When I did IT in Nimeth, I knew I was not going to go into production because I was not trained to talk to machines. I was not wired to talk to machines. I did my internship in Luth. I knew I was not going to go into hospital pharmacy because it was just not my thing. And I'd already, you know, gone towards marketing from my IT days in Rails and AstraZeneca, and that's what I did. So that's career advice. Not in 7 to 10 words, but I believe the message is clear.
Yeah, very clear. So any one person that you would say significantly influenced your career? One person?
One person, no.
Okay.
Many people, yes. Many people. I learn every day. I'm learning from you today. I've learned from Imika, I've learned from Ethel, I've learned from Prince Julius, Adelusi, Adelui, I've learned from Professor Leriba. A few people have more impact than the others, you know. So if you say one, I won't even start. But if you allow me, yeah, I can give you like 25.
Okay, great. That means we would definitely need to have another conversation after this, because we have opened up a can of worms, because there are so many things I think we still need to dive into, but time will not permit us. So we would need to have another of this kind of conversation. So if you wanted to cook up a successful career, there's a pot now. 3 ingredients that you think should definitely get into that cooking pot.
Integrity is key. Integrity, you can't joke with it. 100% integrity. The God factor. And a clear vision. I won't say clear vision. I won't say clear vision because you hardly ever get. I never had a clear vision. So I won't say clear vision. Integrity, no brainer. The God factor, no brainer. Maybe hard work. Hard work and persistence. I'm not making it for ingredients, but hard work, yes. There's no free lunch even in Freetown. You have to put in the work.
Absolutely. So if Famshino, 20 years ago, that was when, 20 years ago, you probably were just getting out of uni and all that. So what would that Famshino say to you today?
Okay, don't try. Are you mean this? That's what you say to me. Because 20 years ago, 2002, I was just coming out of pharmacy school.
Yeah.
I was just coming out of pharmacy school. I would not have thought, I'm a pharma alliance, So I was like, wow. That's what my 23-year-old guy was telling this old man now.
But that's a really good place to end. And before I end every episode, usually I always end with a quote. And that quote for today is one from Albert Einstein. And it says, try not to become a man of success, but rather try to become a man of value. One thing I've come to see is in almost every of our episodes, everybody that has come has kind of embodied what the quote for the episode has been. And you made mention of it. You really need to identify value and then be able to give it. And then every other thing will come.
Very well said.
All right. So thank you so much, fam. Addition of Fanny B for coming on today and for speaking to
me. How you did it, I don't know. How you're able to box me into this at very short notice. I don't know, but like I said, some of you just have these things and you have it going for you. Keep it up. Well done. I had a nice time. I had fun, you know, and I'm hopeful that this recording will add value to those who will listen to it. And probably when we see ourselves tomorrow, next year, 10 years time, 20 years time, 30 years time, 30 years to be around, wow, very much around 30 years time, yeah. I want us to share sweet memories of, I listened to you and one thing you said helped me. And I'm hopeful that these 2 hours, one thing will make sense out of everything. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure. I'm a friend of YPG. Somebody said that. Yeah, I like that. The future, the youth are, you are no more the future, you're actually the present now. So get up and come and take your seats and let some of us step aside for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. We cannot thank you enough. You've given a final word, yeah, but I want to kind of get something. Panel 14. What should we expect? And what kind of, is there something you can maybe chip in for white?
Okay, so Elsa was in my office last week and she muzzled out a huge commitment from me to YP. So yes, YPG will be very well represented at the panel this year. Last year they were sponsored by Reload. This year, I told her I'll do my best to confuse Reload again to get him to do the sponsorship. But whatever it is, you're going to be in there, both physically and virtually. This year, like I said, we have a very good problem. The conference is sold out, sponsorship-wise. As I speak here, we are right now fiddling with the 4-day conference format. We have not announced it, but we are fiddling with the idea because the 3 days is booked to the hilt with content, you know. And what was our big thing this year was to bring in international speakers to Nigeria. But for some interesting reason, largely due to calendar conflict, we couldn't pull it off. But we are considering actively, I don't know when you'll be listening to this thing, probably it will happen, probably it won't happen, but we still want to bring in the international flavor, which may be a day one virtual. The giveaways this year will shock people, you know. I've told the sponsors to dig in and bring out their best, you know. Content, killing it. As I'm speaking here, this is the 18th of the month. As I'm sitting here, the keynote speakers are not yet decided. But when they are decided, you will, as usual, it won't be below your expectation. So keynote speakers, God helping us, are going to blow your mind. Content, God helping us, is going to be huge. Sponsors are ready, giveaways, killing. YPG, you're on board. Panel 14, I expect the YPs to come in now big time. You know, yes, we are going to give you your allocation, but then those without allocation, probably I'll get some sponsors to also subsidize the gate fee for young pharmacists who are interested in coming. It's not so much about the money. No, panel has never been a money-making venture. It has been a value addition program for the industry. And so I really want us to come in and make it a success. Thank you.
If you have stayed on to this point in this episode, I cannot appreciate you enough. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode of Spotlight by PSNYPG, do out to like, rate this podcast everywhere you listen to podcasts, and also share the podcast so other people can find us. Let us know what you think. Send us an email at psnypgspotlight@gmail.com. And until next time, when I am back again with another episode and another exceptional guest, always remember to reach higher.